Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CatSource production. In this episode, we discuss purpose, mental health, and the military lifestyle. This episode is brought to you by the CatSource brand podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com. Our guest today is Alan Simmons, author, speaker, and Marine Corps veteran. We are super excited to have Alan join John Priori in our office for the special Veterans Day chat. Alan inspires. With his stories and experiences from his days in combat, there are many lessons you, the business leader, can take from this episode. As you will hear from Alan in this chat, it's all about finding your purpose and never standing down from a battle. And we would like to thank Alan and all the veterans for serving our country, and a special thanks to Alan for sharing his story with us. And with that, let's welcome Alan Simmons.
All right, Alan. So let's get right into it. I want to know the story of how you got into the Marines, because it's a bit unconventional.
Yeah. So I'm a senior in high school, and the girl that I was dating off and on, we broke up, and I guess she was seeing someone on the side. I did not know about that. And being young and careless, not practicing safe intercourse, you know, she was pregnant, and I had to figure out what my next steps were. A couple of buddies were going into the Marine Corps, so I decided to go in with them. As I'm in boot camp, I find out that it wasn't my kid, from a letter. It was like a Dear John letter, but from a guy. But yeah, I get the letter, and I'm just like angry, upset. You know, I'm calling my parents, asking them to get me out of the boot camp, because boot camp was miserable. It was hard. I didn't want to go through it. I wasn't the patriot. I was just a guy trying to get money for a child instead of going to college. But, you know, after finding out that the kid wasn't mine, I had to stay in the Marine Corps, which was one of the best decisions I made in my life due to unfortunate circumstances.
Right. So did you ever come out and, I don't even want to say thank, because what she did was not right, but thank her for putting your life on this track?
Yeah, I think my thank you was more so like a forgiveness, like, yeah, you know, yeah, the peace.
Yep.
I don't think I ever said thank you for trapping me. But we are on good terms, you mm-hmm. know, we're friends, and mm-hmm. you know, I have no animosity towards mm-hmm. her, and you know, I'm thankful.
Yeah. So stemming off that, obviously you wanted to get out of boot camp. The Marines weren't your first option, but you did it because you wanted to make money out of high school. How, at what point did you actually start opening up to the Marine Corps and to the service?
It took me a while to open up to the Marine Corps mm-hmm. because boot camp was hell on earth in Paris Island, 90-something degrees outside, you know, in the sand. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And then I believe that Okinawa, Japan, I'm 17, 18 years old, Okinawa, Japan made me love the Marine Corps. And then I hated the Marine Corps because I had to go to Iraq, you mm-hmm. know, so it was just like, you know, but Okinawa, Japan was when I first really started embracing, mm-hmm. you know, the Marine Corps. And even, well, to be honest, at boot camp, when we had our graduation, you know, that was the acceptance when you're after the crucible, you know, and your drill instructor gives you your Eagle, Globe, and Anchor, we call it an EGA, and he looks you in the eye and he accepts you. I feel like that's when I was actually proud to be a Marine.
Right. Yeah. So I went to my brother, who's a Marine as well. Yeah. We went to Paris Island for his boot camp graduation. Mm-hmm. There's a few things I took away from that. One, I wasn't cut out to be a Marine. That's for him. He could do it after walking around and seeing, you yeah. know, just seeing the atmosphere and what everyone was going through. I mm-hmm. gained, not that I didn't have respect for the military members, right. but I gained an incredible amount of respect seeing what all of the boot camp members were going through yeah. at that time. And then also you can see how proud everyone is mm-hmm. upon graduation from boot camp, because it's not easy. Like right. you mentioned the crucible. That's insane. Yeah, like going insane. Through that, going through months of not talking to people when in, especially in today's age, like you're used to talking to your family, talking to anyone on a daily basis, and all you have is letters.
Right.
And I couldn't imagine in your situation going through all that while dealing with this back at home, your whole life really going on a complete separate path while you're at boot camp.
Right.
So that's incredible. And then we take it from there. You go to Japan and now you're in Iraq. One thing we've discussed off air, which I want to get into, is your quote unquote rookie story from Iraq. So myself personally, I'm big into rookies, interning, getting into really just learning and taking your experiences one step at a time. Yeah. However, you didn't have that quite experience. You had to jump right into it. Talk to me about that.
Jumped in. So, well, it was actually Afghanistan, my second deployment. So in Afghanistan, I deployed with EOD, which is Explosive Ordnance Disposal Company. And I was an electrician. These are the guys that are out there looking for bombs and stuff. But I was their admin support. But while we were in Afghanistan, Marjah, Afghanistan, I believe it was like a Saturday or a Friday. And then my friends asked, hey, Simmons, do you want to go on a patrol? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds like a good idea. You know, we're out here in this city and we want to go tell the people that we're here to, you know, keep them safe. I was like, that sounds like a good idea. I'm cool with that. You know, we're not going too far. And, you know, so the next morning I get to formation. You know, we're checking in and the captain, he's telling us, you know, what our positions are in a formation. And he's like, Simmons, you know, you're going to be up top. And, you know, if you could imagine, listeners, if you could imagine a V, the letter V, imagine the tip of the V. And that's where I was leading the formation, the tip of the V, the guy who should die first. That's what I call it. But I made a joke and I was like, you know, you can't put the black guy up front. It's like, I'll die first. It happens in the movies all the time. But they thought it was a joke, and then we went out on a patrol. But out there on a patrol, we was patrolling, ended up running into this kid who came out screaming in his Dari language, and the interpreter told us that the Taliban put an IED in the road. So at this time, I was freaking out. I was nervous because I was the front lead guy on the right side of our formation. And IEDs are usually hidden under the earth on the side of the road somewhere where you just don't know where it is. But I was standing at an intersection, looking down my rifle scope in the fields, looking for possible Talibans to see if there was anything weird happening out there. But it was just quiet. It was really quiet. And the Holy Spirit spoke to me while I was standing there, like in my mind, if you could imagine the inner you speaking to yourself. And he said, look by your foot. And I was just like, what? It's, you know, random. And I take a look by my foot and there's a haystack that's about shin high. And I lift the haystack up and there's a propane tank with 12 9-volt batteries and wires and a cell phone strapped on top of it. And I'm like a deer in the headlights. Like, I just freeze. After we get that under control, because we had a radio jammer, thanks to my Sergeant Laudermilk, funny name, but Sergeant Laudermilk. You know, and we were able to set up a 360 patrol around, 360 security around the IED. And another friend of mine asked if we could, or told me that we were going to clear a house. And after me trying not to clear that house for 2 minutes, he ended up talking me into going inside that house. And we knock in the door and there's a man and his daughter and her son playing in clay. And fast forward, possible Taliban running down this rat trail is what we call it, but it's like a side road. And, you know, we call command, and this is one tough thing about the military is that overseas there's rules of engagement, you know, and you can't just go shooting everybody just because they look like a Taliban. But this guy was running and he had a blue vest on with a radio in his hand and he was like booking it the other way. And so we call in, we're like, command, can we engage? They're like, does he have a weapon? We're like, no. So it's like, don't engage. As soon as this guy disappears into the tree line, we start getting pow, 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 pow. I don't know if I'm allowed to do sound effects. Pow, 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 pow. You know, and like, you know, AK-47s just shooting, and you can just hear the bullets breezing past my foot and in the air. And it was just like really scary and intense. And this was my first firefight. And, you know, I was really scared at the time. And so I'm on the ground and I'm shooting my rifle on burst, which is not a good thing. And my buddy told me to take it off of burst. He's like, Simmons, no, save your rounds. So after doing that and being pinned down, we decided to regroup with the rest of the squad. And while running towards them, an RPG, a rocket propelled grenade, landed a few feet in front of me, and the blast pushed me in the air, and I hit the ground, and my ears were screaming, and you know, my heartbeat was slowing down. And at the end of that, it was just silence. And I remember sitting in the dark room, Indian style, and I have to put that in there because it was just so weird to be in Afghanistan, unconscious, and then, you know, somewhere in another realm, sitting Indian style in a dark room. You know, and after that experience, you know, being pinned down, being gunned down, and shot at for hours, you know, I was struck with PTSD, traumatic brain injury. So I was narcoleptic from time to time. I forgot a lot of stuff, very angry, anxiety to the roof, you know. So, but that rookie experience was me being on the front line, you know, as these other guys were, they were used to it. Mm-hmm. One guy, Corporal Benjamin, he was, you know, screaming and just shooting, yeah, yeah. You know, and I was inspired, but I was like, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Right. No, that's a crazy story that, yeah. You know, you think about it, you're sitting here in this office today, but you were just going through that a few years ago, right?
Right.
That's crazy. But the other thing I want to get into is going through experiences like that. You touched on it, but it has to lead to some sort of mental health issues, some PTSD, specifically while you were in, because you had to continue out your time. It's not like you could just go home after.
Right.
What sort of issues did you deal with from the PTSD mental health side post this experience while you were still deployed?
Well, I mean, there were instances where I was having nightmares. Mm-hmm. My chief warrant officer, who was our higher up leader, his cottage was right next to mine. We all slept in a tent in a cottage. It was about 10 guys in a cottage, or not in one cottage, but in a tent. Mm-hmm. And every time he would move at night, I would easily be startled and not remember this in the next morning, but I'd wake up and say, "What are you doing?" You know, and like they joked and said, "Simmons, we might need to put a radio by your head and ask if we can get up, you know, in the middle of the night," type stuff. Like it was bad. And then I would fall asleep randomly, you know, maybe from the traumatic brain injury, but I would just be in the middle of a conversation and lights out, you know, fall asleep. The guys actually took a picture of me sleeping after I fell asleep in the middle of a conversation.
Right.
So.
Wow. That's insane. Yeah. And then does that lead to a struggle to wake up on a daily basis and continue to do it? And then B, being happy about where you're at. So did it lead to any sort of depression? Did it lead to anything like that?
Yeah, I think being like I had a few more, I think I had a month or so left after that event, but I was just mainly trying to brush it off like every other soldier or Marine would do, you know, is suck it up and try not to show that you're affected.
Right.
I think the biggest effects came after I got out and I didn't have any other comrades around me to kind of help silence the pain and like, you know.
Yeah. Is there something that goes into that as far as coming back and the civilians, as the Marine Corps call them, don't understand what you were just going through?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, you have this story and it's a cool story, but you're damaged at the end of the story.
Right.
You know, and throughout this whole process of the story. So I think what civilians may not understand, and even when I went to the Veterans Hospital in Virginia, I was going there religiously. And they offered to lock me in a room and take away my shoestrings and, you know, like they told me I couldn't leave unless they said it was time for me to go.
Oh, wow.
Right. So I was just having a breakdown. I was having mental issues. I was having anxiety. I was always feeling like someone was coming after me. I was always on alert. I would always search my home with a gun, like check under my bed, the closet, the bathroom. I just super paranoia. And so the pills that they were giving us or giving me at the time was really strong and it would just keep me idle. And emotions would just kind of sit and not go anywhere. And I was like a robot sitting down, you know? So I just think that a lot of people, when it comes to our troops and the civilian side, it's, you know, trying to understand the mental health, but everyone's mental health is different. You know, someone could go through the same experience I did and be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and someone could just be worse off than I was, you know, and a lot of friends have committed suicide that I know from after war, you know, so it's just like, you know, you never know how strong that person is and how much durability they have, you know, how they're able to last through these different things, you
right.
know?
Yeah, no, that's it. And then you have, I know you have a saying that you sort of live by. It's never stop, never quit, repeat.
Right.
What does that mean to you?
Man, that is my life right now. Like I literally, once I decided to take that motto and just go with it, you know, I'm held accountable to my words. You know, there's power of life and death in your words, you know, in the tongue. So, you know, my friends around me now, they're like, no, Alan, you can't quit. Even, you know, days when I'm like, I just want to drop out of school. You know, I just want to be an entrepreneur. You know, I just want to quit being an entrepreneur and just quit going to school and work a job. You know, that never stop, never quit, repeat is, you know, don't kill yourself.
Right.
Don't commit suicide. Don't allow depression to get the best of you. You know, don't allow anxiety to take over you and to never quit chasing your dreams.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And I know it's not, after talking to you, it's not just you saying that. Mm-hmm. It's, you did struggle with suicidal thoughts. You right. did struggle with anxiety, depression, all of these things. So it means a lot more than just a saying or a quote on a t-shirt or anything like that. This was your life.
Right.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Definitely.
And then let's get into a bit your transition out of the military and into now regular life, the business world, being a student. So now you're a student at UNC Charlotte, right. studying engineering, but you're also dabbling in entrepreneurship and speaking and really building your brand while you're getting this degree.
Right.
What have your experiences been transitioning from military life to business slash entrepreneurship life?
It was tough. Mm-hmm. I started UNC Charlotte 5 years ago and I dropped out of school because I failed calculus and I failed physics. I thought I was dumb, thought I was stupid. And I just thought I was one of those, you know, everyone has the jokes about Marines being the dumbest, you know, and I was like, oh, maybe it's true. Maybe mm-hmm. I am dumb. Maybe my traumatic brain injury is like slowing me down, you know? So I dropped out of school and I started working retail, you know, which was good for a season, but you know, I started regretting, you know, dropping out of school, you know, and I realized that I had to work 10 times harder than other people, you know, other freshmen in college. I had to work 10 times harder. I had to study more. I had to get in my books more, you know, so it was just understanding that I had to push harder for something that could be easy for another person, you know, but it was really tough, the transition, because I was on academic probation after failing those two classes. So I really was about to drop out the second time going to school when I started back at UNC Charlotte. But my teacher, my professor, Mandy McLean, she was really helpful. She was my pretty much my probation officer in school, you know, the last stretch. But she helped me understand my purpose and my capabilities and my abilities. So it was eye-opening to see that there are so many veterans on campus. I work at the Veterans Center who are struggling in school. And, you know, the VA may not have the answers for us. You know, we're older than a lot of the college students there, you know, so it's the community is important, but also not segregating ourselves from the college students. Because right. we can get into that and that could make it harder to yeah. be a college student, you know?
Yeah, no, that's it. And I think that all ties back to your, again, you're saying never stop, never quit, repeat, right. because you very well could have stopped going to school, but you're still plugging at it today while doing entrepreneurship, speaking. So you have a passion for speaking and telling your story to others and really just touching the lives based off your experiences, what you've been through, and how you've been able to push through. So I know while you're in school, you're doing all of these different things with a focus on purpose. Mm-hmm. So A, what do you see in the business world when you're giving these speeches, let's say, to business professionals, students, whoever that may be, around purpose? Because mm-hmm. as we talked about, people many times discuss purpose and how important it is, but they truly don't understand it themselves. Is right. that what you're trying to pry out of people?
Yes, exactly. I was at a gas station one time and mm-hmm. this guy was, he saw my sticker, Marine Corps sticker. He's like, hey man, I'm a Marine too, you know? And we started having a conversation about God, about Christ. And he was saying that a lot of people walk around with Christ in a box. like, oh, I got Jesus, I got Jesus. And they never open the box. They just have the gift box. You know, they never open it. And he was like, you know, that's the same way I feel about having people in your life. You know, a lot of us have friends. We have friends, but we never open the box. So I took that conversation and I started writing and researching and thinking about it. And I was like, wow, you know, there's a whole lot of my friends that I just have friends I've been friends with forever, but I never asked them, what is your purpose? If you sit down and ask anyone, what is your purpose? 50% of the time, somebody might say, I don't know. I really don't know. I've been working 9 to 5 for 20 years. I'm going to college because my parents want me to. I'm doing dental hygiene, whatever it is, you know, because this is what my dad did, you know, and a lot of times that hurts people because they never open the box, which is themselves, you know. So at my brunch events and when I talk to people and counsel people, I ask them, you know, what is your purpose? And if they don't know, I start looking at what they're good at. Because a lot of times our purpose has something to do with what we're naturally good at. I'm naturally good at talking to people. I just love talking to people. You know, so my purpose would ideally be something where I'm in sales or I'm speaking and entrepreneurships, you know. So a lot of times people just need to figure out what they're good at. And then they can, that'll lead them to their purpose, you know, and a lot of times we fail to dream, you know, we kill the child inside of us because of responsibilities and obligations, you know, so if we allow that inner child inside of us to continue to dream, you know, I want to be an astronaut. Well, what's stopping you from being an astronaut? You know, I want to be an engineer. What's stopping you from being an engineer? You know, so whatever you want to do and whatever you want to become, you know, the purpose is inside of you.
Right. Well, I think that's very important. And then tying this all together for yourself, I don't know if you'd necessarily say the Marines were your purpose at that beginning, but it's this initial overarching story about your life to where getting to your purpose took you on different paths, but you got there. So how did you personally get to your purpose?
Well, I call it like catching the bus, catching the train, catching the flight. You know, it's different vehicles that get us there.
Right.
And a lot of times it might be a beat down vehicle that you don't even want to be seen in, you know, a situation like being homeless, you know, and it doesn't seem like it's a part of your purpose, you know? So like with me, I just continued to open my ears and my heart to what God was speaking into my life as far as what people he was sending into my life, you know, as I studied the Bible, like what God was speaking to me when I was reading that, as I was reflecting over my life. I could get clues on what steps would be next. Like, okay, if I meet John, then this is what I'm going to do next, you know? And so a lot of times we have to be willing to take the different vehicles and different transportation routes and options so that we can get to our purpose. And it won't always look like a Lamborghini. You know, that car might be a beat down Beetle and you just got to get in there. And, you know, so you might have to work that 9 to 5 for 2 years to build yourself up. Right. So the purpose never changes, but the transportation does.
Right. Well, that speaks a lot to what you're doing and what you're doing in this community. You touched on the homeless. So I know you have a nonprofit called Live in Love.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that and also why you're so passionate about driving their purpose in the community.
Okay. I mean, being someone who had to sleep on people's couches for different reasons, being someone who was on the brink of homelessness, like living on the streets because my last resource ran out, that touched my heart. You know, a lot of people, when we look at them, we don't see their story. You know, a lot of people look at me and don't see, oh, this guy slept on people's couches. Mm-hmm. He luckily landed a bed in one of his friends' houses, you know, but so the displaced and the homeless people of Charlotte touch my heart and the people around the world because they still have purpose.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times they treat them like cast iron or castaways. And, you know, it's like, oh, let me just throw them away. And they're just homeless people. But, you know, when you really sit down and have a conversation with these people. They're veterans. A lot of veterans are homeless in Charlotte, and I've met a lot of them. We did a food drive, clothes drive. We set up shop in Uptown Charlotte, and they came out, and we spoke to them. We prayed with them. We encouraged them. And it's not that we have all the tools and resources to help them get to where they need, but if you can push someone forward, that's all I want to do. You know, so with Live in Love, we focus on meeting their need first. You know, if you're bleeding, I'm not going to come to you and tell you to drink water. I'm going to fix your wound first, you know? So we try to find the wound, we address the issues, and then we give them other resources that we have, you know? So the homeless community in Charlotte is really important to me because they are people without family.
Right.
And a lot of times being a veteran in different cities and countries, you're a person without a family, except for the men in your barracks or the men in your platoon, men and women in your platoon.
No, that's deep because, as you say, a lot of the people in that homeless community are veterans. Mm-hmm. And yourself as a veteran as well, you're almost all they have a lot of times.
Right.
Like, they don't have parents. They don't have siblings who may have just given up on them and they don't know how to find their purpose. But just people like yourself and what you're doing at Live and Love can help pry that out of them while still helping them out, helping them get on their feet, helping them just give some sort of energy into their life that really they're sitting on the corners most of the times and people are just walking by them.
Yeah.
Like they're invisible.
Right.
And so it just takes one, someone like you to come in, talk to them, really just even provide a spark.
Mm-hmm.
Like you talk about that in the business world, like someone can come into the office and provide a spark.
Right.
And now the rest of your day is great. You go and you talk to someone and you give them a spark. You never know where that's going to take them. You never know what that's going to do to their life 5 or 10 years from now. It can help them get back on track. It can help them really just land somewhere that they never thought they would have been because you went up there and you're helping a brother or sister out that even if they weren't a veteran, you're still going to help them.
Right.
But the fact that you're now their family, quote unquote, because you're all veterans, you're all former Marines, that means so much to them.
Right.
Yeah. So let's wrap this thing up with a few just curious questions on what you've got going on.
Okay.
One, I want to get into yourself and your studies. Mm-hmm. So why is education that important to you? You went through the Marines, you could very easily go out and just speak, but you've chosen to take advantage of, let's say, the GI Bill, take advantage of going to school. Why was that something that was very important to you?
The honest answer is that I'm proving to myself that I'm not stupid. That's the honest answer. Even doing electrical engineering technology, like it is ridiculous because it has nothing to do with what I want to do, you know, and I just never wake up saying, oh, I can't wait to go do some engineering stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I could go do some humanitarian things. But, you know, the honest answer and the really transparent answer is that I really want to prove that I'm not stupid. And that's to myself, not to anyone else. But it's just proven to myself because I've taught myself down so many years with PTSD that, you know, I felt like I was handicapped into education.
Yeah.
And even just going to the disability center on campus to get more time on tests and stuff. Nothing knocking people who are doing that, but I really want to prove to myself that I can play at the same level as everyone else.
No, that's incredible. So that day that you walk across the stage and you get that piece of paper, that's going to mean the most to yourself.
It is, man. Like, I just got chills thinking about it. I just have this idea of just wanting, I want to speak at my, you know, I want to speak at my graduation. You know, I want to be the speaker and I want to, you know, encourage people who never dreamed of going to college, you know, who thought that college was just ridiculous. And I believe that school education is important. Like I learn online and offline, you know, so I learn about stuff that doesn't apply to my degree. Mm-hmm. And I also dig into my degree as well, you know, so education is important. But for me, this is just a milestone that I want to receive, you know?
Yeah. And then the final question I want to close it off with is when was the moment you told yourself you needed to make it happen and gave yourself no excuses?
That was about a year ago I hit 30.
Yeah.
When I hit 30, I was like, something has to give. I can't play around anymore with my time. I have to be intentional about my time. I have to be intentional about the people I meet. Like we met a couple of days ago,
right,
and now we're here doing a podcast. So it's you were intentional. I was intentional. So I believe that if you're intentional about what you want to do, other people will reciprocate that.
Right. No, that's incredible. And then how can people now get in touch with you if A, they want you to come speak,
mm-hmm.
B, they want to get involved and Live and Love, or just talk to you and have a conversation and, you know, be intentional with you, right? How can people get in touch with you?
It's Allen Levi Simmons, AllenLevisimmons. Allen Levi Simmons on Instagram, Facebook, AllenLevisimmons.com. It'll take you to my website and you can reach me there.
Great. Well, Allen, I appreciate you coming in. Thank you for your service. And this was an incredible story for those to take from.
Awesome. Thank you for this opportunity.
One of the best things about CadSource is having the content platform that gives us the opportunity to chat with amazing people like Allen Simmons, and then having the ability to bring that content to you through a podcast platform. If you want to learn more about Allen and his ventures, you can find him on LinkedIn. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter at Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to this CadSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. This episode is brought to you by the CadSource brand Podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com.